Good afternoon. I'm Holly Raffle, and I'm here with Holly Strickland and Allison Murphy, and we are going to talk about the role of cultural frameworks in breastfeeding initiation and persistence in Ohio's Appalachian region. And because of the character limit of the title, I couldn't tell you that this is all of our research and all of our studies is in women who are receiving WIC benefits, so this sort of kind of carries on our theme of women who are involved with the WIC program. We would be remiss if we didn't appreciate our contributions from Leslie and Amy. They were unable to be with us today. We have no disclosures. Our context, just to give you a little bit of an idea about our study, there are 32 Appalachian counties. Ohio has 88 counties. We have the lowest breastfeeding rates in Ohio are found in our Appalachian counties. And what I'm hearing today, like California WIC, Ohio WIC is very progressive in trying to figure out what is it that we need to do to increase breastfeeding for all of our moms. And so what Ohio WIC did is they got together and they said, you know what? We need to address this. Our Appalachian County breastfeeding rate for just ever breastfed at the time was 40.8%, which was lower than the state rate of 54.7 and lower than the national rate of 61%. So they had a brainstorming session. They said, you know, we really need to know, we need to understand, is there a individual attitudes or cultural practices or something different about these women in Appalachia? So we put out a request for proposal to address this issue and kind of do a needs assessment. My institution, Ohio University, responded, and we were awarded the contract, and it started just a beautiful relationship between the Ohio Department of Health, Bureau of Nutrition Services, and our institution. So our participants, as I mentioned before, we did 19 focus groups, and with the guidance of the Ohio WIC program, we focused on the 19 counties that had the lowest ever breastfeeding rate. We talked to 176 women in total. One thing that we knew, because we are looking at cultural norms and practices, that we needed to be culturally competent in our recruitment methods as well. So we worked with the WIC staff members in each individual county in order to have them help us recruit participants to come to our focus groups. And so we had a really high participation rate. So who were our participants? We had the majority of them were actually born in an Appalachian county, which is good because we know that the people move and they're transient, move in and out, but we knew that we were reaching the folks that we intended to reach. About a third of them were currently breastfeeding. 41.3% breastfed longer than a week but weren't currently breastfeeding. 4.1% breastfed less than 1 week, and we had about a quarter of them who never breastfed at all. Our mom's median and average age was about 27 years old. If the mom breastfed for at least 1 week, the median duration of breastfeeding was about 3.5 months. The average duration of breastfeeding was about 6.5 months. And again, if you remember, about a third of our women were currently breastfeeding. That's why I think the median is probably the best measure to look at. For our data collection for all of our 19 focus groups, we used a standardized open-ended interview protocol, so our interviews were very consistent among all of our counties. We used the socio-ecological model to guide our work. Although our focus was culture and cultural practices, we wanted to make sure we didn't miss anything, and the socio-ecological model made sure that if we asked questions in all these areas, we had a pretty good picture of the influences that were impacting our women. In all qualitative research, trustworthiness is very important, so we leaned upon Creswell in order to help us kind of stay honest and trustworthy and make sure that our work really was credible. One thing that's probably really important is clarification of researcher bias. Both Holly and I are from the Appalachian region. I've been in the Appalachian region, lived and worked there my whole life, except for just a handful of years when I was in school. And Allison has extensive experience. While she's not from the region, she has worked in West Virginia and Ohio's Appalachian region as well. And so I think that's important for you to understand that that we're part of this culture that we are investigating. I teach qualitative research methods, so I could talk all day on this slide, but I won't because I know you're more interested in the findings. All of our interviews were transcribed and they were verified, and Holly can attest to that, not the transcription part, but the verification part. We analyzed our data in MaxQDA, and we really leaned on the shoulders of Wolcott and Gibbs to guide our analysis. One thing that's really important with Wolcott, he looks at taking your data analysis as a means of data transformation. So this idea of interpretation is really important. It's sort of going beyond beyond just the coding and trying to sort things in boxes, but go to this interpretation. Use theory to provide a structure that will allow you to make hypotheses about what's actually going on in your data, what your informants told you. And again, it's really important for us to make sure that we tell these women's stories in order that we can make change in their communities. So the theories that we use, one is probably a seminal piece on Appalachian values, which is Loyal Jones's work. So if you're from Appalachia or just interested in it, it's a great read. It also has beautiful, beautiful pictures of the region in there. The other work that we drew from was Ruby Payne's work on the characteristics of generational poverty. Because as we know, we have this intersection between Appalachian values, which is a high poverty area, as well as the characteristics of generational poverty, as most of our women who were WIC participants were experiencing generational poverty at the time.
Hello. So Allison and I are going to talk about some of the characteristics of generational poverty, as well as some of the Appalachian values that we saw come up again and again throughout our focus groups. And then we're also going to talk about some of the communication strategies that health professionals can use to tweak their interactions ever so slightly to help that message really resonate with the Appalachian population, and as well as some advice on how to develop culturally competent literature materials for this population. Okay, so our first major observation was that women communicated through stories. In fact, our focus groups were often just one big story where we throw out a question, someone responds with their story, another person responds with their story to that, and so on and so forth. And I know that I personally do this as well. If you ask me a question, I've got to give you the background, I've got to give you the context, I've got to give you my thought process, and then you'll get your answer. And so this applies to health professionals because it's necessary to be patient. You might have to sit through a lot more information than you wanted or needed to know in order to get that information that you were really getting at in the first place. And that also requires some active listening, because you may get details that are not really relevant to you, but it's also necessary that you can tease out those parts that are going to help you make that relationship and get your message across. And as far as written materials go, we found that women preferred vignettes rather than bullet-pointed lists. So rather than like the do's and don'ts of breastfeeding, putting information into a story where a woman can identify with a character or an individual and have that memorable context of what happened in that story is a good way to reinforce those key teaching points. Another observation was that humor was very culturally appropriate for this population. Now, you'll see in that second bullet point that humor can be perceived as appropriate or inappropriate depending on your lens. And we are in a professional environment. However, it's important to remember that because humor is culturally appropriate for this population, it's definitely okay to use humor in your interactions. And in fact, humor can be used as a tool for women. And if you'll see in this quote here, sometimes when women are met with a dissenting opinion, maybe from a community member or from a family member, if they can have kind of a witty remark or something that reinforces their decision, like this woman when she says, well, would you eat your lunch in a bathroom? That kind of helps to empower her decision of, I'm breastfeeding, there's nothing wrong with it, this is my decision and this is what I'm going to do. And then, again, going back to how vignettes can be useful in written materials, humor is a very memorable context. So if you can put a teaching point in a joke or in a humorous story, it's much more likely to be remembered later on when that comes up. And then finally, fatalism is very, very common in this population. And Loyal Jones talks about fatalism in his book. And it's basically just this notion that whatever is meant to be will be. Whatever happens is meant to happen. And so in the context of breastfeeding, women took this to mean that if they had any kind of obstacle or any type of difficulty, they just weren't meant to breastfeed, you know. And that's important because we know that there are often many hiccups, you know. It's difficult, it takes practice, it takes instruction, it takes support. And so it's important to give women realistic expectations that although this is natural and although this is healthy, it doesn't mean that it's easy. So be prepared for that challenge, be prepared to persist and not give up at the first sign of a hiccup. And then going along with that, it's important to make sure that you're ready to give women different resources that they can go to if they are having problems. For example, you might say, you know, you can do a one-on-one with a lactation consultant, or if you prefer groups, you can do the breastfeeding support groups, or if you like the privacy of your own home, you can do a webinar so that they can make the choice that's best for them.
And as we tag team, good afternoon. You have to understand that the folks in Appalachia come from a Scots, Irish, or German background. And those folks can tend to be very independent, full of pride, and want to be very self-reliant. They will drive around a mountain and not ask for directions. They do not want to ask for help. Often this is perceived as stubbornness. And so it does interfere a lot of times when you're trying to address a situation. It leads back to that fate part of it also. They come with a predestiny frame of mind. What's going to happen is what it is. If it works, it works. So oftentimes we have to allow these women to feel comfortable in their independence. They want to know that they're secure when they go out and be able to breastfeed in public, that it's okay. They're going to be comfortable with it. Those that are very strong with it come out with the remarks like Holly just showed you about when people come up to them and say, why are you doing that? Because it is the best thing that I need to do for my baby. You know, or, you know, why don't you go to the restroom? No, I'm not going to feed my baby in the restroom. Would you eat your lunch there? You know, another comment from another one of the women was, how long are you going to breastfeed that child? And the woman's response was, until he's 20. So, you know, she knew what she wanted to do, and she was going to take it there. When they ask questions, provide multiple solutions for them. Give them an option as they write through that, which leads to, make sure I hit the right button, the communicating piece of it. There are two examples on this. One is very negative, one is very positive. It's obvious in the first statement that the lactation consultant did not understand the Appalachian point of view, and that the mother's confusion and this a fear of asking for help because she wants to be perceived as independent and self-reliant covers that muted cry for help. And that lactation consultant really didn't understand that. In the second example, the lactation consultant got it. And so regardless of what Laurie was trying to do, the lactation consultant was able to work with her and get her through it. And that because of that, Laurie thought that that woman was the best person in the world. So again, it was understanding what Laurie was not saying because of her fear of expressing the bit that she needed help. Also, as we look at it, we need to look at the power of the voice. Looking at it from an adult point of voice versus the parent point of voice. The parent being very judgmental, authoritative, just really kind of, you know, it is what it is, and there's no other indication for that. The adult voice being non-judgmental, asking questions, it's a conversation, allowing them to interact with each other with that. Also be aware of the nonverbals that occur, because when you're talking with some of the women from Appalachia, you're going to hear some pretty crazy things, and you have your jaw-dropping moments when they come out with some information. Also, they tend to live in the moment. This is a piece of generational poverty. They don't really live by a schedule. They don't have a time frame. They live in what they suddenly recognize that, oops, I need to get my WIC voucher, so I need to get to the WIC clinic. Okay, my appointment was last week, but they just show up anyway. You've got to figure out how you're going to handle that type of thing that kind of maybe goes beyond what your course of policy might be. So you've got to adjust to them, give them options with that. Don't just say, nope, this is it, you can't do this, you got to wait till next week. You know, give them the options of waiting and going on. The same when they show up late for their breastfeeding appointments. It's the same principle that we have to remember to use. Building the relationship. There's a fear of the outsider. As Holly said, I'm not originally from the Appalachian region, but I lived there for 25 years of my life. So I became one of them. I understood it. Looking at how you talk, how you dress are all a piece of that. They're most important with that relationship, with building the personality and being able to relate, rather than maybe how many degrees or how much education a person has. So as we bring it all back together, and I'm kind of rushing through this to finish up in time, looking at those things, we want to build the peer helper program. We're not allowed to use the word counselor in Ohio because of legal ramifications, so we have to call them breastfeeding peer helpers. And so we want to address it and make sure that we get that Appalachian peer helper working with the Appalachian region. We've also developed a regional lactation center with a webcam for when we get beyond the scope of practice of the breastfeeding peer helper. And so they can get online, they've got webcams back and forth, they can talk to each other, they can observe the mom, help the mom at the same time with doing that. Being able to recognize those cultural factors, we're already starting to do some teaching with our Appalachian-specific WIC projects to help them understand. A lot of them are from that area, but it's not until they see it face-to-face and somebody actually addresses it with them that they recognize what they need to do to change their behaviors to be able to influence the breastfeeding and everything else that we do for the WIC program. Adjusting our communication techniques and also being able to develop more culturally specific materials. We got to get away from the bullet points. So this is our contact information, and thank you very much.